Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free Blackstone 8-piece accessory kit when you buy a Blackstone 28-inch griddle. Plus, get two free select Craftsman V20 tools when you buy an RP brushless drill and impact driver combo kit. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Good to see you.
All right, so Mr. Brennan, if you can briefly tell me what it is you want to introduce through this witness.
To remind the court, on direct examination, the defense promoted Dr. Lapisada's credentials, including specifying her successes with the station nightclub fire and her running of her office. We have an audit from 2005, State Department of Rhode Island, Department of Health. In that audit, it paints a very different picture than was presented on direct examination. In that audit, they investigated the chief medical examiner, and they compiled the history of statistics for the medical examiner, which was Dr. Lapisada. There were no reports, incomplete reports, and unsigned reports of over 1,500 individuals between June 30th, 2000 to June 30th, 2005. So in that 5-year period, there was an extraordinary number of individuals that weren't properly attended to, showing negligence, if not malfeasance. It was recommended that the standards, policies, and practices of Dr. Lapisada's office would need to change because of the extraordinary backlog of cases regarding autopsies. In addition, it was noted that the incomplete reports confirmed that there was significant concerns with the historical management practices of the medical examiner's office shortly after Dr. La Posada resigned. In addition, it was promoted that in the station nightclub fire, Dr. La Posada had a heroic effort. And in her testimony, she also noted that there was a failure, or implied there was a failure, because the medical examiner or somebody did not go to the scene to look at the turf in front of 34 Fairview Road. She suffered the same criticism for hours and hours after the station nightclub incident. She was contacted with a request to come to the scene. She refused to come to the scene, did not appear for at least 17 hours. Directly on point to the claims that she's making against other people is the same conduct she engaged in on a more extreme scale. She testified in Commonwealth versus Tompkins. In Commonwealth versus Tompkins, she was listed and testified as an expert, attempted to testify as an accident reconstructionist, which was denied. Inevitably, the court made conclusions. Actually, in that case, her efforts to be an accident reconstructionist were denied. Then she testified in a case called Patino. And in Patino, after testifying, she received great scrutiny and criticism from the court. The court noted on page 1025 of the transcript, when Dr. La Posada gave the testimony, she knew the boy wasn't like this because he fell off a bed. She knew the mother was lying. She read the text messages and knew the defendant had beat the boy. The only reason I conclude that she offered such testimony was to distance the defendant from causing those bruises, setting up an argument against malice, but instead destroyed her credibility. On cross-examination, she came across as a hired gun. Sometimes it's seemingly small things that impeach a witness's credibility. Inevitably, on the credibility determination by the court would agree. The jury gave greater weight to the testimony of Dr. Gilson and Snelling than they did Dr. La Posada for the reasons I addressed previously. The jury was justified in discounting her testimony and concluding the other doctors testified apparently impartial. While she appeared as a paid advocate, at least on this occasion, without impugning the witness's integrity, because that witness is known to the court, but in this case, when she testified, she was not credible. And that's a direct credibility determination by another tribunal about her testimony. So I would like to, and that's why I came sidebar rather than ambush, to give the court notice that I'd like to get into the criticisms regarding her run as medical director that led to resignment after she was audited and left 1,500 bodies unattended or incomplete. Also get into the criticism she received for her handling or lack of handling of the station nightclub fire, and finally get into the credibility, adverse credibility determination in the Patino case.
So I'm not familiar with the Patino case, so I'll need a copy of that.
Yes.
All right, Mr. Jackson, I'll hear you.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, Mr. Brennan said that the audit established that, as the chief medical examiner, the audit revealed that she left 1,500 bodies unattended, was his quote. Bodies unattended. That's absolutely not what happened in that situation. It was a political situation. The medical director for Rhode Island came in and took over. He began to change protocols and cut quality control. He said he did not want a second set of eyes on any of the reports, not the autopsies. There was never a suggestion ever that an autopsy was not performed efficiently and timely, never. The reports that were attendant to the autopsies were, it was a two-tiered set of criteria that Dr. La Posada put in place to establish quality control and quality assurance. First, the medical examiner conducts the autopsy and writes a report. Then the doctor herself, the chief medical examiner, because she is a perfectionist, determined that she was going to establish a protocol in which she would put eyes on every single report. Hundreds and hundreds of reports per year. in doing so, she had to prioritize which reports were going to take a priority, which ones were being subject to litigation, which ones were going to be subject to criminal cases, and which ones were never going to be subject to any review at all. For instance, if somebody was found, let's say somebody that was without family, et cetera, found and unidentified, there's no litigation attendant to that report, she would put that report aside and get to that report after she dealt with the reports that were on sort of on the front burner, if you will. After, by the way, none of the reports were ever not done. They were all completed. There were a small fraction of reports, according to the audit and according to Dr. La Posada herself, that had to take a back seat. When the medical director came in 2005, by the way, this is 25 years ago. Right, these are autopsies that were performed, and the audit was performed for autopsies and reports dealing with the year 2000. It's 2025. This is 25 years ago. When the new medical director came in for Rhode Island, he said, "I don't want any review of any of the reports because it's more efficient and it's faster to get the reports out in a timely fashion." She resisted and said, "I will never ever," and she was published saying this, "I will never ever sacrifice quality for speed. I want the highest quality coming out of this office." They had a difference of opinion. She walked away because he was asking her, the new medical director was asking her, to sacrifice quality of the conduct that she was undertaking as the chief medical examiner for the state of Rhode Island. So it's a very different circumstance than was just suggested. No bodies were ever left unattended, ever. Certainly did not involve the other phrase that was just used is negligence and malfeasance. It was a backlog, and they had a very public political fight over it. Number two, with regard to the Station nightclub fire, her staff was on location immediately. She, as the chief medical examiner, was there the same day. So that's of no legal moment. It's of no consequence. It certainly has nothing to do with her opinions and conclusions in this case. The Tompkins case, we've already talked about that in voir dire, Your Honor. The Tompkins case dealt with an issue dealing with accident reconstruction, which she's not undertaking. I'm not asking her, and she ain't saying.
I've excluded that part of it based partially on the Tompkins case.
Right, and I don't know anything about the Patino case, and what I would say is, given the fact, we don't know what the facts of that case were. We don't know what the trial was about. We don't know what the cross-examination was about. We don't know why she was called. We don't know what she looked at. We don't know why she was looking at what she did look at. We don't know why she didn't look at things that she might not have looked at. We don't know why her opinions and conclusions were ultimately rendered. We would have to have a trial within a trial, which I would be happy to undertake if someone gives me a file. Happy to do that. But I don't think we want to do that. I don't think the court wants to do that. Also, I will say, I don't think that attacking this witness's credibility is in good faith by the Commonwealth. Mr. Brennan himself has hired Dr. La Posada personally no fewer than four or five times. Maybe it's three or four times. He knows her qualifications. He knows the quality of her work. He's actually undertaken to consult with her as a medical examiner and a consultant. So I don't believe that these last two issues are in good faith. I don't believe the station fire has anything to do with anything because she was late, according to Mr. Brennan, in coming to the actual location. She was there the same day, and she had an entire staff that was there immediately. And in terms of the audit, it's a 25-year-old political fight that isn't quite what Mr. Brennan made it out to be. So I don't think any of these things are relevant for cross-examination. I'll submit.
All right.
I just want to make a note that Attorney Jackson has a way with words to just inflate or make things up. I have not hired Dr. La Posada four or five times. And so that is just a mischaracterization, which he likes to do for the public. But the reality is, I've used her a few times, and the last time I used her, I'm not going to disclose why I don't use her anymore, because it would be unfair without her in the room. But the suggestion that somehow I'm endorsing qualifications of this witness, I am not. That's what I'm going to say on the record.
Okay. So the first two, the backlog issue, if we can call it that, with the ME's office. I'm going to allow the Commonwealth to get into that through questioning. Same with the Station nightclub fire, based on the testimony already in evidence. Those two areas, and Mr. Jackson, without leading, you can certainly go back and rehabilitate her. But those two will come in. I'm not going to do anything with Tompkins because I used it for the basis of keeping out what appeared to me to be biomechanical engineering opinions of this witness, and she's not qualified to do that. So I have not read Patino. I will read it over the lunch break and see if we get anywhere with that. Okay, so I need a copy of that. I want you to give Mr. Jackson a copy as well.
I will.
Okay.
He has a copy.
Okay, so.
I didn't know that. I appreciate that.
All right.
The only other thing, I don't know if we're going to handle now or after lunch or later, but I want to address the issue of the three.
Okay, so let's mark those now.
Sure.
Can we mark them all as one A, B, C?
I have no preference one way or the other. It's just three. They're all.
Mr. Jackson, if you can I just see it over here?
Of course.
Just hold up the size. Okay. Did you mark ID? Yeah.
Yeah, it would be, yeah, just to mark them.
You know what, show me that one again too, please.
Okay.
I can make it this one.
It says on it.
H, quadruple H, and I, blue I.
Oh, all right. All right. Mr. Brennan, there's no objection to these coming in through another witness, so you agree that they'll be coming into evidence?
I'll stipulate.
All right, and what's the objection to them coming in through Dr. LaPosada?
It's not part of the reporter opinion. She's gone beyond her report, talking about the fact that she's studied x-rays and given an opinion. I think that suffices. It really, I think, is beyond the scope of her testimony to begin with. I'd be gracious with it. Stipulate to these, I'm sure Dr. Rentschler would utilize them to stipulate.
So you'll stipulate to them prior to Dr. Rentschler?
I will.
So you can use them with Dr. Rentschler?
I expected that I could, because he certainly used them in his analysis and opinion. But I shouldn't be subject to the entry of evidence in the defense case in chief. I understand I can use them in Dr. Rentschler's testimony, but I want to use them with Dr. LaPosada. She's a medical doctor.
Would you
consider them? Or purposes of her opinion. I cannot understand.
So what do you want to ask her about them?
Are these the x-rays that you review? Yes, that's it. That's
okay.
It.
Okay. So go ahead.
That's all he's gonna ask, I won't have a problem.
Okay, yeah, I have no problem with that. In that form.
Literally, so the x-rays that we talked about a little bit earlier, yes, this is the right hand, yes, that's the arm, sorry, the forearm, yes, that's the upper arm.
All right, so they're cumulative, but if they're coming in anyway, I will let you put them in.
Thank you.
All right, so the last thing is Dr. Rentschler. I need to hear argument from both sides. I have a new PowerPoint. So I'll hear both of you. Mr. Brennan, I'll hear you on your motion.
We've received the most recent update to Dr. Rentschler's PowerPoint. There are some additions, different analysis in that PowerPoint. This is within 24 hours of him testifying. There are opinions on page 6 and 8 of his May 7, 2025 report. And there are a number of numbers that we have objections to. Dr. Rentschler just generally shouldn't be allowed to express opinions and conclusions about what he thinks about the case or about other witnesses.
All right, so I'm looking, I think, at the new...
Do you have a copy of the new one?
From today, page 6.
Thanks.
So what I have are just photos with measurements, so I don't know what the testimony that corresponds with those. I've read, obviously, the report of Dr. Rentschler from May 7th that does not seem to detail everything, and that's no criticism. I'm just saying it's a scant report, so I don't know what the opinions are regarding these.
I'm sorry. Yep.
I didn't want to speak over Mr. Brennan. I apologize. I just wanted to let the court know that you were talking about that. Now, we went through, based on Mr. Brennan's suggestions last night, and significantly edited the entire thing, literally every single slide that you had a problem with. There were a couple that we just removed from the left, but it's very, very...
I see that a lot of the hearsay has been removed.
Okay.
And I can identify this with the court if it's helpful.
Thank you.
I'm sorry?
I can identify this with the court if it's helpful, the ones that were changed.
All right, but
it made 2 months.
So what do you both into? I'm gonna hear from Mr. Brennan first. What are you objecting to as the report now stands?
Okay. I have a most recent copy of the report now. So 9 through 27.
Slides 9 through 27 or pages?
Slides 9 through 27 now have Dr. Rentschler identifying and attempting to match different abrasions with different holes in Mr. O'Keefe's sweatshirt. And so basically what he is trying to do is to suggest that there are a different amount of abrasions relative to the amount of holes, or perhaps he might want to testify about that the holes in the sweatshirt were in a different place on Mr. O'Keefe's arms than the abrasions. The reason why this is concerning is because there is no background for him regarding fabrics. This is a different and new opinion that we have not prepared or obtained an expert for. We probably have very little time to get somebody to rebut this analysis regarding fabrics. I don't see anything in his CV or his history that allows him to equate the number of holes in fabric with the number of abrasions on somebody's arm. It does not consider or account that there could be multiple wounds from one hole, or there could be holes that don't create wounds. So whatever the implication is going to be by Dr. Rentschler, we're not very sure, but it obviously would require some type of expertise, which I do not think that Dr. Rentschler has a foundation for. So those are 9 through 27 generally, and then specifically, I can run through quickly the individual objections I have. Slide 6 tries to define the theory of the alleged incident. Doesn't say whose theory it is. It implies it's the government. It's an improper suggestion.
Hold on. Okay, so which one of 1, 2, and 3 on 6.
One is objectionable. What's the core issue of the case? It's an ultimate issue for the jury. An expert reconstructionist or a biomechanical engineer shouldn't be defining the core issue of the case. And then 3, first event is alleged contact between the rear of the Lexus and Mr. O'Keefe's right arm. Again, that's offering an opinion that doesn't have facts and evidence, not in a position to draw that opinion.
And is 2 okay? Or are you moving to the whole slide?
No, on number 6, all 3 of them shouldn't be there. Asking what the core issue is in the case, Dr. Rentschler and no expert should be defining what the core issues in the case are. They should talk about their training experience, any testing, observations, evaluation, and then give their opinions, not core issue in the case.
All right.
Slide 9 outlines perhaps his process. The first step of the analysis to determine if the arm injuries are consistent with the physical evidence. Evaluate the abrasions and compare the evidence. I suppose this is what he's done. This is one of the less offensive ones. Although unnecessary, it doesn't provide an opinion. I could live with that. The next one.
You could live with what?
Number 9.
Okay.
Number 23. Again, this gets into that new core opinion about trying to identify or, I think, compare the abrasions to the different wounds. I think the part that's objectionable is the words measurements, question mark. I'm not sure if it's implying a failure of somebody else. It seems to be an opinion, and I'm not sure of the context of it. 24. The expert is trying to define what Dr. Welcher had done. It may be that he's saying he conducted his testing based on the position of Dr. Welcher's arm. I think that would be an appropriate comment, but it's not clear what they're saying. The pain transfer test number 2 is the only test noted with respect to the arm.
So without the text, are you objecting to this slide?
No.
Okay.
31 posits questions regarding ultimate opinions. I think it's inappropriate. And then 32, I think, is improper because it ultimately endorses or vouches for the witness's credibility. I think he certainly can give an opinion that the evidence is inconsistent with the injuries to Mr. O'Keefe's arm, but I don't think it should be on the slide bolstering his opinion. 33, again, it's posturing the weight of the evidence. And it's resigning the government to a particular study, one study. It's really a commentary on the government's case. It goes like this. Number 1, Dr. Welcher only did A, and second part, A is insufficient. So that's really what this is saying. It's commentary, it's hearsay, it's inappropriate. 34. I think if one said that that's what he did, I, Dr. Rentschler, took a step to determine the kinematics of Mr. O'Keefe's arm during the alleged incident and asked how would this arm move, I think that would be appropriate. But he shouldn't be giving a opinion on what steps should have been taken by Dr. Welcher. Number 2 on slide 34. And number 3 I don't have a problem with. The next one is 46. Thank you. Again, this is bolstering the expert's opinion by putting it in writing on a slide. I think some of these opinions are appropriate for Dr. Renshaw to share with the jury, but his final ultimate opinion shouldn't be endorsed on a slide. 47. Again, this is self-endorsement of the success of his tests in giving his opinion about his success. 1 and 2, I think, are inappropriate. 3 has really no context, standing alone. And 4, if he notes that's his next step, I wouldn't have a problem with 4. Slide 54. Again, gets into his opinions. Number 2, he gives an opinion about a different expert, a medical opinion. And 3, it's again self-endorsement on his own opinions. So all these are opinions either bolstering himself or somebody else's work. I don't think it should be in a slide. 55. I think it's accurate. I think it's proper testimony. I don't think it's proper for a slide. Same with 56. I don't know that he has the basis for 1. 2, I don't have a problem with on slide 56. And 3, again, it's bolstering his opinion. So I think 1 and 3 are improper, 2, not. Slide 58. I don't know what the basis for 1 is. I suppose we'll have to see. If these are Dr. Renshaw's views, I don't know how they're relevant to the Commonwealth case, but certainly, I think he has the experience to make these conclusions, but it shouldn't be in a PowerPoint. He shouldn't be commenting on the reports of another expert in a PowerPoint, 3. And 4 is ultimately an opinion that he's self-endorsing. 66. Again, it is an opinion. I don't think it's an admissible opinion, and it shouldn't be in a slide. He's trying to draw a conclusion on what the jury should conclude based on the Commonwealth's evidence. He's not in a position to do that. 67. Parts of this are objectionable. I think that he certainly could testify. He hasn't seen any simulation by Dr. Welcher, but posturing it about in a manner that suggests there should be doubt in some way is inappropriate. 68, I don't think Dr. Welcher's report was introduced, and putting in a fraction of a report, I can't appreciate the significance of it. It's hearsay. Perhaps there's a reason he'll be able to point to the report or talk about the report. I understand that, but putting in a random page from a report as hearsay should not be admissible. I don't know if there's going to be a conversation about trying to introduce the entire report, but one page will take it out of context. 72. I think the expert has a basis for the opinion. I don't think ultimate opinion should be in PowerPoint because of self-endorsing. 74, again, it's a conclusory opinion, it's bolstering. some of these can be said but shouldn't be in PowerPoints. Same thing with 75 and 76. They're ultimate conclusions. And so I'm not in agreement with all of the conclusions that the expert may try to introduce, but testifying about an ultimate opinion and putting it on a board to self-endorse shouldn't be permitted. And those are my objections.
Okay. Ms. Little?
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, I'm sorry if I stand here only being said, but to be able to reference the PowerPoint.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you, I appreciate that. First of all, there were no additions, just to be clear, to the PowerPoint. The only changes that we made were directly in response to the objections that were filed by the Commonwealth. We did delete a large section to try to accommodate some of their concerns, as well as shorten some of the opinions. So those were the only changes. I just wanted to make clear to the court there are no additional opinions that have been set forth in the PowerPoint. With regards to slides 9 through 27, that was not one of the issues that was identified in the Commonwealth's motion. They objected to slide 9. There's half of those slides are not referenced.
I do agree. It's a new objection. I just don't know when there's an objection raised how a biomechanical engineer is qualified to testify to tears and clothing.
So this is a direct test. His testimony is going to be based on his knowledge of forces and forces applied to certain objects and how that results in injury.
And I understand that, but some of the specifics that he says. I'm just saying I had a concern, so I understand it's new.
I think that we'll be able to satisfy the court's concerns by laying the proper foundation.
All right, so we can come back to the fabric argument or whether it's beyond his scope of expertise. But what, actually, Ms. Little, if I can just ask you, and I can hear you later, as I assume everybody wants lunch and we're coming back in at about 20 of at the latest. Can you just explain to me why these slides, if Dr. Rentschler is permitted to express these opinions, why we also need them on slides? That's the problem I have.
I think that's a great question, Your Honor. And the reason we didn't include these on the slides is because we objected to Dr. Wilkins coming in on his PowerPoint.
So I looked at that yesterday.
Copy of the specific opinion that was placed up on the screen with regard to his opinions and conclusions. That was done over the defense's objection.
So which one? Because I did look last night at that and did not see it.
It's slide 136, Your Honor. The totality of the evidence.
Hold on 1 second. Is it a conclusion page?
I don't know. Hold on. Page 136. It's entitled Evidence Brief
Lexus Hitchcock
P. It states the totality of the evidence is consistent with the right rear corner of the big 2021 Lexus
Hitchcock
and
the zero P,
striking the rear posterior aspect of his head on the frozen ground.
Okay.
So if he's allowed to do that,
so that is different than what I said he could be asked on his ultimate question, right? But it still came in? Was there, I'm sorry?
Yes, that came in over the defense.
All right. Because what I did note is that I was very careful to say exactly what the ultimate question could be from Mr. Brennan. In fact, there were objections. I sustained them twice, so I wrote out exactly what could be said, and Mr. Brennan asked a variation of the first one, and there was no objection. So I didn't remember that this came in. All right, so I will take a look at that. What I would like to do in the interest of time, so maybe we can talk about that in the conclusion page, but where he outlines everything else, there are so many pages with text that I may not have the problem, a problem with testimony regarding this, but why do we need testimony and text so much here?
This is to assist the jury. That's,
it's what?
This is to assist the jury. There is a significant amount of information that needs to be relayed.
Okay.
It's an 80-page PowerPoint. This okay. is solely to make sure that this is sufficiently and effectively. I think it's helpful for these. We've narrowed down the text on the slide significantly as the court can see those PowerPoints.
Okay.
Just to the major issues, I think we've streamlined this a lot, but I think having the PowerPoint will allow us to make this go smoothly and quickly.
All right, so I will look at these. What I'll try and do is if there are any changes in the first 15, I'll try and get those done during lunch, and then we can have this argument afterwards.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
All right. All right, we'll see everybody no later than quarter of.
You are unmuted.
Back to session, may be seated.
All right, the jury is coming over. I just wanted to tell you what I was able to do during the lunch break. So, Mr. Brennan, you argued for 4 points of admission regarding this witness. I'll allow in 1 and 2. I've had a chance to look at 4. I think I already told you I would not allow in 3 because I've already considered it. I've now looked at the 4th one, the case. I'm not going to let you get into that during cross-examination. If the door is open and you think you can get into it after redirect, please come to sidebar.
Thank you.
All right. And also, I had a chance to look at the actual exhibit regarding what came into evidence from Dr. Welcher and Ms. Little. Contrary to what you said and what Mr. Alessi was nodding to, page 136 did not come into evidence. It's a blank page. So that PowerPoint did not come in. I had a chance to look at Dr. Rentschler's PowerPoint, and at least for now, maybe you can persuade me otherwise, any text that has hearsay on it that you say will help assist the jury, what I want to say is I think we have to give the jury some credit here, okay? They have been listening to this case intently for weeks. I don't find that anything that you've recommended here comes in to assist the jury is necessary to assist the jury. So before Dr. Rentschler testifies, those slides that have, that were objected to, that have text, are out.
May I have this can I have a moment just to examine the Dr. Welcher PowerPoint?
No, not right now. You can look at it, yes. You can look at it while we're doing, bringing the jury in.
Okay, because we have 4 copies of the PowerPoint, and I know that I'd like to be able to. 137.
Mr. Alessi, please. Mm-hmm. 136, 137, and 138 are all blacked out. All right, are the jurors here, are the jurors on their way, right? Okay. Thank you.
session, please be seated.
All right, Mr. Brennan, whenever, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Dr. Lapisato.
Good afternoon.
Are you on point now?
You are.
You were asked on direct examination about your qualifications. You were a medical examiner for the state of Rhode Island, is that fair to say?
Yes, I was the chief medical examiner.
For 20 years?
12 years.
I'm sorry, 12 years. When's the last time you worked as a medical examiner?
In 2005.
When's the last time that you conducted an autopsy?
I've done probably a handful of autopsies, private autopsies, in my consulting practice.
Since 2005?
Correct.
When do you think the last time you did one is?
Maybe 4 years ago, four or five years ago.
4 or 5 years ago?
Yes.
Okay. Since you left the medical examiner's office, have you had any specialized training in brain injuries?
It's all part of keeping up with the medical literature and knowing the forensic pathology literature, reading medical literature. So it's a continuing endeavor to keep yourself educated with medical updates.
Since you left the medical examiner's office, have you had any specialized training in brain injuries?
I've not gone to a course on brain injuries.
Since you left the medical examiner's office, have you taught any students on brain injuries?
Yes.
Have you given any classes or seminars on brain injuries?
Yes, I have.
In coup counter coup, how many times have you experienced that as a medical examiner, that condition?
Well, I myself haven't experienced it, which was good, but in cases, hundreds of cases. It's a common injury.
You said you did differential diagnosis. That is to exhaust any potential bias you have, correct?
Well, a differential diagnosis is to think, how many ways can you get this finding? And it does help prevent bias.
Did you say on direct examination, part of the benefit of differential diagnosis is to make sure that you don't have a bias?
Yes, yes.
In order to eliminate bias, you're supposed to look at all reasonable alternatives, correct?
Yes, that's part of it, making a differential diagnosis.
So you don't just look at a person's body, come to a conclusion, and ignore other evidence. That would kind of defeat the purpose of differential diagnosis, wouldn't it?
Well, you always have to look at all the evidence.
And so if you didn't look at all the evidence and you disregarded some of the evidence because you had already made up your mind, that really wouldn't be the proper study of differential diagnosis, would it?
Right, I don't do that.
I'm sorry, ma'am?
I don't do that. I always look at all the evidence.
And would you look at all the evidence even if it was contrary to whatever opinion you want to give in court?
Well, the evidence allows me to come to an opinion. So it's not like I decide on some opinion I want to give and then look for the evidence. The evidence is going to tell me what happened to the body.
So you would never say, like, I don't need to look at that evidence if it's presented to you. You would look at it and study it and consider it in differential diagnosis?
Sure. It may or may not apply, but I'd look at it.
Because if you did that and said, well, I don't need to look at this, and it was relevant evidence, that would defeat the whole idea of differential diagnosis, correct?
Well, you always want to look at all the evidence that's going to help you decide what happened to the body.
If you were to ignore relevant evidence because you already made your mind up, that could create some type of bias, even if you're not recognizing it, correct?
Well, I don't make my mind up. I make it up on all the evidence I have. Then if something else other evidence comes up later, I have to reevaluate everything and consider that new evidence.
When you were talking about car collisions, I don't want to belabor the point, but you didn't major in physics, did you?
In what?
You didn't major in physics, did you?
No, I took physics, but no, didn't major in it.
Okay. And the last time you took physics was probably, what, undergrad?
Correct. Thank goodness.
You have no study in biomechanical engineering?
No, I'm not a biomechanical engineer.
Understood. You never taught courses in accident reconstruction, have you?
only in terms of looking at the injuries on the body and showing how that they could or could not have occurred from impact with a motor vehicle.
Have you taught classes in accident reconstruction?
Only as far as it would affect the findings on the body.
Do you know what I mean by when I say accident reconstruction?
Well, accident reconstruction meaning, and I'm telling you that my expertise in accident reconstruction is restricted to looking at the body and then understanding how impacts may or may not have occurred to the body. I don't take a car and look at mileage and such like that.
You don't do any studies of the actual vehicles, you're focused on the body?
I'm focused on the body, but I also look at the vehicles to look at the points of impact that might be possible.
You do not have any advanced study in biomechanics, do you?
No.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned that when you were in the medical examiner's office, you had a number of higher profile cases.
Well, every case is important because somebody's dead.
You pointed out some pretty specific ones on direct examination. Were those more important, the ones that were highlighted, or is that the same as every other case?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you had mentioned the Egypt Airline crash, Station nightclub fire. Those were highlighted or pronounced on direct examination. Are they equally important as every other case?
Oh, absolutely. Every person is my patient.
You talked about some of your commendations. The Station nightclub fire, you received quite a bit of criticism on that, didn't you?
Well, there was a flurry of negative press without any basis.
You had mentioned that a doctor, a medical examiner, should have gone out to the scene to look at the area where John O'Keefe was found to make observations. Did you suggest that in any way on direct examination?
You have to know what the scene looks like. And usually that is documented in police reports and in police photographs who document the scene.
The Station nightclub fire, that had numerous victims, didn't it?
Yes, 100.
And you received criticism because you were repeatedly requested by emergency responders and police officials to come to the scene, and you refused?
That's incorrect. First of all, nobody called me to come to the scene, and medical examiners are not first responders. As soon as I got a call that there was that fire in the nightclub, my investigator went right to the scene, and I was in constant communication with him throughout the early morning hours of that horrible accident. And I went into the medical examiner's office because I had to start getting ready to run our office 24 hours a day to not only take care of the poor individuals who expired in the nightclub fire, but also the regular work of the medical examiners. So there was no need for me to go to the scene because I had my investigator there, and my job would be at the office to get things all set up to handle the influx of deceased.
Did you receive criticism that over 17 hours there was an effort to have you come to the scene, but you refused?
I'm going all out in a different form.
Yeah, that's incorrect.
Hold on,
oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I didn't mean to scare you.
Okay.
Hold on for a second.
Okay.
Ask him differently, Mr. Brennan, please.
Did you receive criticism that official?
I'm going to allow it based on the ending, pursuant to the ending. Let's hear it.
Did you receive criticism that for over 17 hours officials were asking you to come to the scene and you refused?
It was untrue. It was printed in the newspaper. We looked up all the phone records and provided it to the newspapers and showed that nobody called me to go. I would have gone if I needed to. I had my investigator there. It was just bullshit. No, it was erroneous stuff.
Was there other criticisms in 2005 before you left the office?
No, there was a flurry of stuff in the papers. There were union issues, new director of health, new governor. So yeah, there was a little flurry of stuff, which was not substantive.
So you inevitably did resign in 2005?
Yes, because my budget was going to be cut, and I knew that if I had to get rid of a medical examiner, we couldn't do a good job for the state, and I'd done it. I'd been chief for 12 years. I'd been on call 24 hours a day for 12 years. which was an honor, really. But then if I couldn't do a good job, if we cut the budget, I had to get rid of a medical examiner. I couldn't serve the people of Rhode Island well, so I resigned.
Did you resign shortly after the audits and criticism?
No.
Same year?
Oh, I don't even remember.
Okay. After you resigned, you opened your own company?
Yes, I started an independent consulting practice.
How much of your business is consulting?
It's a consulting practice.
Yep. How much of your business, how much of your income 100%
It's consulting.
Do you consult in both criminal and civil cases?
Yes, I do.
What percentage of cases are criminal cases?
It's maybe half and half.
Half criminal, half civil?
I don't keep track of it in that way, but that would be a guess.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
I don't keep track of numbers of civil or criminal cases that I'm consulted in. If I had to give an estimate, it would be half and half. I've worked on over 1,000 cases in my private company.
And fair to say you get compensated for your time?
Yes, I get paid for my time.
Dr. LaPosada, you had mentioned that there were some scratches that you had taken a look at on Mr. O'Keefe's body. If we could have Exhibit 165, please. Now, would it be fair to say, Dr. LaPosada, you do not know the genesis of that cut on Mr. O'Keefe's right eye?
I do not know what caused it. I can tell you what didn't cause it, but I don't know what did cause it.
You said that was from blunt force?
It's from application of blunt force to that little area that broke the skin.
Okay. When you were asked a question about whether that was consistent with a punch, you opined that it was consistent with a punch, yes?
It could be consistent with a punch.
You weren't saying it was consistent with a punch to a reasonable degree of medical certainty, were you?
That would be within my differential diagnosis.
Okay. It could be consistent with all other types of blunt impact, or many other types of blunt impact, couldn't it?
That's correct.
Ground, perhaps?
No.
No, an object?
If it was an object that could get into that area under the eyebrow, yes.
You mentioned the spoiler on the back of Ms. Reed's Lexus. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
Do you know how tall John O'Keefe was?
He's around 7 foot, 5'11", I think, 7'2", something around in there.
No, he's more closer to 6'1". Does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay. And that spoiler on the Lexus, do you know how high off the ground that is?
No.
Did you ever try to measure it or ask for photos or any information about that?
No, I looked at the photos.
Did you ever ask for any measurements or try to take any measurements?
No.
Could I have Exhibit 166, please? Did you see this cut on Mr. O'Keefe's nose?
That's a scratch. It's not made by a sharp instrument. It's not a cut. It's a scratch.
Is there any scratches on the left side? Do we have a photo of the left side? Please. And that you say that's a scratch, not a cut?
Correct, because a cut means it's made by a sharp thing, like a knife, and a scratch is made by something that's kind of rounded, that has a little point on it, but it's not sharp.
Okay. Do you have any information or basis to say where that scratch came from?
No.
Did you do any differential diagnosis on that scratch?
I don't know what caused that. There could be a number of things that caused it. Okay.
There was no scratch on the right side of Mr. O'Keefe's nose?
I don't see it one, no.
Could you zoom in, Ms. Gilman? So the only scratch was on the left side?
That's not a good photograph because there's some blood obscuring the skin.
Yes.
If my memory serves me, there was a scratch on the left side of the nose and maybe a small scrape on the tip of the nose.
And we can go back to the left side?
Okay.
And you said that could not have been caused by a sharp object?
Correct. It's not an incised wound. Incised wound means a bladed sharp cut. This is a scratch, not made by a blade.
Were you aware the defendant made a statement that she pulled a piece of glass from the defendant's nose?
No.
And you would say that that wound is inconsistent with being caused by glass or a sharp object?
It would not be caused by a blade. It could be caused by a piece of glass that was thick.
I thought before I offered you that statement, you had said that it could not have been caused by glass. Do you now have a different opinion?
I don't remember saying it couldn't have been caused by glass.
Didn't you say it couldn't have been caused by glass or a sharp object?
A sharp object.
What
like a sharp object, like it's not an incised wound made by a blade. It could be caused by something sharper that's thicker, but is not does not have a thin blade. So it could be caused by a thicker piece of glass.
If somebody is deceased, does any blood pressure from their heart still move in their body?
No, they're dead.
If somebody removed a sharp object like glass from somebody's face, would they spurt blood if they've died?
If you're dead, there's no blood pressure. So if you're dead and you remove something, there may be some superficial blood, but it's not going to have blood flow because your heart's not pumping blood out of the cut ends of the blood vessels.
So it's not going to spurt if you pull something out of a person's skin if they've passed?
You wouldn't get a spurt of blood from arterial pressure.
I just want to ask you a very few questions about hypothermia.
Sure.
You mentioned that Mr. O'Keefe's body temperature at the hospital was 80 degrees?
Yes.
And there's different ways to take somebody's or body's temperature, isn't there?
Yeah, that was a rectal temperature, so that's a good representation of the body temperature.
Is the variance between a common practice of taking temperature and by somebody's mouth and rectal, is it about a 3 or 4 degrees difference, or do you have a different experience?
It can be different. A rectal temperature gives you a better internal body temperature. The oral temperature, if you're breathing in or if you just had something cold in your mouth, may not register a proper temperature. So the rectal temperature is the preferred temperature for a medical diagnosis.
98.6 is an important temperature, isn't it?
Yeah, it's our usual normal body temperature.
And so, is there a standard? Is 95 degrees considered hypothermic?
Clinically you would start to worry that the person might be experiencing a bad effects of hypothermia.
At
95, you start to worry about it.
And could some of the things that happen is labored breathing?
Is what?
Labored breathing.
What about labored breathing?
Well, if someone is hypothermic, if they're 95 degrees, does it affect their breathing patterns?
Not especially.
Okay. Does it affect the way their respiratory system works?
No.
Does it have any effects on the human body if you're hypothermic at 95 degrees?
No. You're still okay.
If that temperature continues to decline, it starts to become dangerous, doesn't it?
It can.
Mr. O'Keefe was evaluated, and at the hospital, his body temperature from a rectal reading was 80 degrees at about, 637?
Correct.
Did you know that before he got to the hospital, first responders had him in an ambulance?
Of course.
Did you know they turned the heat up and put blankets on him and tried to provide warmth to him before he got to the hospital?
Yes, that would be standard practice.
And that standard practice would usually add temperature to the person, wouldn't it?
Well, it might.
Okay. So it's possible it could, but it might not.
It usually doesn't add that much.
I see. And so inevitably, at 6:37, Mr. O'Keefe's body was 80 degrees?
Yes, when he got to the hospital, his rectal temperature was 80 degrees.
And so that is a drop from the standard, or what's expected, of 98.6 degrees. That's a drop of at least 18.6 degrees?
Yes.
You mentioned that Mr. O'Keefe, after suffering his head injury, would not have moved other than twitching.
Correct. No purposeful movement.
Were you aware that he had an iPhone with healthcare data on it?
No.
If there's no movement, assume for a second there's no movement of Mr. O'Keefe after 12:32:16, and he's found a little after 6 a.m. in the morning, that's about 5 hours, or 5.5 hours, correct?
About.
And if somebody is in the cold for 5.5 hours, that's consistent with dropping from 98.6 degrees to 80 degrees in body temperature, isn't it?
If the person is dead, yes.
If a person is outside in the cold and still alive, will their body temperature decrease?
If they can, people can die of hypothermia, but that's not the case here.
Well, not the ultimate death, but if somebody's outside and they're alive and they're lying in the snow and it's below freezing, will they lose body temperature?
They will, especially if they're not bundled up well.
And body temperature can drop from 2.5 to 4 degrees an hour?
In a dead body.
Okay. In a living person, it can drop 1.5 degrees.
No. A dead body at room temperature will usually lose body temperature at like 1.5 degrees an hour. If a dead body is in a cold environment covered with snow and avalanche environments, the dead body can cool at 4 degrees per hour.
And so a person who is in cold conditions, starting to be covered by snow, less than freezing, they can lose body temperature when they're living, can't they?
If you're sure, you can. People die of hypothermia, but that's not the case here.
Well, someone could be alive, lose body temperature, and not die. That can happen, can't it?
Yeah.
Right. So if someone is in the cold, let's assume they're not dead for a second.
They're
in the snow, below freezing, not moving. Can that person lose body temperature if they're still alive?
Sure. They just lie there. They can become hypothermic and die.
Even before they become hypothermic, can they lose body temperature?
Well, losing body temperature makes you hypothermic. Right. Thermic is temperature, and hypo means below. So your temperature goes down and you're hypothermic because it's going down.
And people can survive from being hypothermic if they get the right care.
Sure.
And so in that 5.5 hours, it is consistent with a person being outside in the cold and starting at 98.6 and ending at 80. That's consistent with being in the cold for 5.5 hours, isn't it?
For a dead body, yes. That's how a dead body would cool in a snow-covered cold environment.
And it could also be consistent with somebody who is alive for some time and then dies, correct?
I don't understand your question.
Somebody could be out in the cold, under the snow, sub-freezing. They could be alive for some time. Their body temperature could drop. And then when they pass and die, their body temperature could continue to drop probably at a more rapid pace. That still fits within 5.5 hours, doesn't it, Dr. Laposada?
No.
Oh. Okay. Because if someone can drop 4 degrees of body temperature in an hour.
A dead body.
Yes. It would only take about a little over 4 hours if it was at 4 degrees to go from 98.6 to 80. Yes?
Correct, yes. So he was exposed to that cold environment for 4 to 5 hours.
If somebody was alive for a couple of hours, it's a lower rate, say they'd lose 3 degrees. And then, after that couple hours, they lose body temperature at 4 degrees, that would still fit and be consistent with a drop from 98.6 to 30 degrees, to 80 degrees, wouldn't it?
No, but you were saying a dead body cools in a cold environment at maybe 3 to 4 degrees an hour, and that has nothing to do with a living body and how long they can stay at a body temperature.
Do you disagree that somebody could be alive, lose body temperature out in the cold, freezing temperature below 32, they could lose body temperature at a certain rate, then pass out, pass, die, and then continue to lose body temperature? Is that possible?
Anything's possible. It's just what's important is what happened in this case.
I'm asking for your medical opinion, though, rather than to be an advocate. As far as your medical opinion.
So sustained and I'll strike that.
As far as
Dr.
your.
Dr. Lapisata, yes. Could you listen to the question, please?
Of course. Thank you, Your Honor.
As far as your medical experience, could somebody be alive outside in the cold below 32 degrees, not moving, covered by snow, still alive, and lose body temperature?
Sure.
And then could they, after an hour, 2 hours, could they then die and continue to lose more body temperature?
Sure.
You mentioned your opinion about injury on Mr. O'Keefe. And at one point you said that it was his injury was inconsistent with a taillight, and you said because there was no damage from the bumper. Do you remember saying that?
I don't think I said it quite that way.
Okay. Do you remember how you said it?
No.
Do you remember discussing or raising the issue of a bumper as part of your equation, that the injury to Mr. O'Keefe was inconsistent with the injuries?
He has no injuries on him that are consistent with being hit by the back of the SUV. That includes the spoiler, that includes the bumper.
Okay, if we could play video E, please.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. Tender, juicy, and its own sauce. Would you look at that? Well, you can't see it, but trust me, it looks delicious. New McCrispy strips, now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.